You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010. This is episode 121, Digital Easter Goodies. Welcome back to another episode of the Wells Tech Podcast. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you are listening to a weekly conversation about technology resources and their potential use in the church and in the classroom. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Coming to you live from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. We're experiencing some warmer weather these days.
Good.
Excited about that. Also excited about our final countdown to final web class.
That's been right.
A lot of preparation put in on our 3-day training sessions we're both participating in next week,
and excited
to finally get the show on the road.
Yep, I am excited too. You have done yeoman's work on putting together some awesome materials, and we've got screencasts, and we've got food, and we've got lots of people coming, so that's great news. Yeah. I'm looking
forward
to that.
Hopefully it'll be a benefit, and these websites will do their job of outreach in a digital age.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a nice segue into our topic for the day, and that is web or online resources specific to the season that we're in. And, of course, we're in the Lent and Easter season. And as I look at the web, even 10 years ago, you didn't have near what you have at your fingertips right now for resources that you could use on your website or in your service folders, or if you use any kind of audio or video aids in the service or Bible classes. There is just a ton of stuff out there specific to Lent and Easter.
That's right. The websites are a great platform for using all kinds of imagery, still images and video images, to spread the Easter message. And so it's wonderful as we start to research these kind of topics to find just the loads of resources that are available for folks to use.
Yep, and there's all different categories of content. Some I would call more promotional, where they could be used as an image in a flyer or imagery or video on a website to promote your Easter service or your Lenten services or Good Friday or Maundy Thursday. Others would be more useful in a worship context or in a Bible class context, where they could serve as a background for a PowerPoint, or even promotional on that level to internal promotions as well. So let's go through a quick list. This is kind of a ministry resource podcast. We normally have a ministry resource section, but this whole first part of our podcast is about ministry resources in the Lenten and Easter season. So maybe we should start with Wells related resources. Wells.net has long had a images section. We used to call it Inspire. Now it's just called, I think, Wells.net Images. Very creative with the new website. If you go to Wells.net and click on Streams Media, you're going to find an area called Images, and that will give you a link to our Flickr resources. We've kind of outsourced our image library to Flickr, so to speak, and we have a bunch of different images there tagged with Lent and Easter.
And, you know, Martin, probably a good point to bring up is that you should always keep in mind about copyright. And these resources that we're sharing via Flickr are open for anyone to use and repurpose for their ministry needs. And so, as you're searching for images, probably not the best idea to just go to Google image searches and grab whatever you can find.
Yeah, for sure, because some are available and some people would not have a problem with you using them. But very oftentimes the images that you come up with in just a Google search are going to be copyrighted, so you can't willy-nilly take what you want. But a safe place to go if you're looking for imagery is that Wells.net Flickr group, because everybody there has signed a consent form, you know, by uploading them. And if you have images that you'd want to share that are Lenten and Easter in nature, that would be a great place to offer them up.
Yep. And one thing that we do with that image set is we repurpose them for our final web customers.
Exactly.
And we have a huge library of images that are sized specifically for the final web image areas in the various professional templates that are part of the final web package. For Easter, we've featured Palm Sunday images, butterfly, cross, and sunrise images. So if you are a final web customer and are looking for some images to brighten up your website for Easter morning, be sure to check those out.
And you've done kind of a nice thing there, because you've sized them appropriately for the different graphic areas that are in some of those final web templates. That makes it real easy just to grab and use.
Yep, plug and play.
Then let's go down to the growing area of video resources. Sally, you came across a few that we've talked about in the past, actually.
Yeah, actually there are several vendors out there that produce video, either something they would call a motion background, which is just basically a video background.
Animated PowerPoint background, something like that. Yeah.
You could have words on top of it or whatever, but there's some motion to it. It's not just a still picture.
Mm-hmm.
Or actual video content, you know, narrated imagery.
Set to music, something themed, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we'll have links in the show notes. We found four different resources that have a whole library of Easter items from Muddy River Media, Centerline New Media, Worship House Media, and Point of Power, which is actually a Wells company that has Easter videos and motions available as well.
Yep. And surprisingly, a lot of these are very reasonable in cost. I mean, you can get a pretty good package for under $20, and some of these are very high quality. Now, you have to be careful with copyright there, too, because when you buy the image, there are certain restrictions on its use. Some maybe wouldn't allow you to put them on a website, but would allow you to put them in a PowerPoint for a worship service, for instance. So you just have to read the fine print there.
And speaking of PowerPoint, good segue, that Point of Power and another company called Image Vine both have Easter PowerPoint backgrounds,
right?
You know, with a cover slide image and individual images for different pages in your PowerPoint, that kind of thing, all themed around Easter. And so if you're looking for PowerPoint resources, we'll have links to that in the show notes as well.
Yep. Speaking of video, we would be remiss if we didn't give a quick plug for just an awesome video that Wells has created and is now available through the publishing house. Many of you probably are already aware of it, The Road to Emmaus. So don't forget about that. There was an offer which now has expired, but you can still grab a copy of that video and use that in many different contexts, whether it be for Bible class or giveaways as an invitation, let's say, to visit your congregation for Easter celebrations. Just a nicely done, I believe it's about a 30-minute video that outlines or dramatizes the journey that Jesus had with the disciples on the road to Emmaus. I've watched it a couple times, and it's one of the best pieces of video I think the Wells has produced in a long, long time.
Yep, and for worship leaders in our listening audience, there's also discussion sheets and things like that that have been created and are available on our Connect intranet site. So if you're looking to perhaps focus a Bible study on that, that's what we're going to be doing here in Sleepy Hour. Our Palm Sunday Bible study will be viewing the Road to Emmaus and discussing it. And so there's resources for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And moving past just imagery, one thing that every church office is busy with, you know, during this time of year is producing service folders. And on that same Connect site are service folder examples.
Yep, we've got you covered from Palm Sunday all the way through Easter Day, all those special services that are occurring during Holy Week. There are loads of examples out on Connect for all of those. And so if you're looking maybe to revamp your service or do something different this year, perhaps you want to look at some example services from other congregations.
We should probably have a show on Connect. That would be that's a growing website that has more and more resources. We seem to be referring to it more and more, so probably a good thing we could talk about. And then last but not least, one thing that struck me during the Lenten season is, at least me personally, but also that could be shared on a congregational level or even in a, you know, in a classroom setting, are reading plans. We had a whole show on online Bibles and reading plans, and ran across through Bible Gateway a Lenten Bible reading plan that walks you through clearly the, you know, the relevant passages that are always highlighted during the Lenten season. Kind of, you know, like the you know, the readings that you would get on your Wednesday night services, your Lenten services, your Passion History. Here's something that you could do on your own with related passages. So we'll have a link to that as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most special things about those Wednesday services is actually, you know, hearing that Passion History, you know, all combined and everything. Yep. So having that to personally read through on a scheduled basis would be very special as well.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our interview for the week. And we were pleased to have Pastor Guy Marquardt from Christ in Lodi, California, join us. He's a former missionary, actually just got up to Lodi within the last year. And he has a very resource, a Lenten or Passion resource, an interactive Passion History that he created kind of in his spare time when he was down in Brazil, and you'll hear him talk about kind of the motivation, and part of it was just to do something in English, because he was learning the Portuguese when he was in Brazil, and he just wanted to kind of stay connected to the English language and the English Bible, so he created an interactive Passion History. So let's listen to our conversation with Guy Marquardt. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Pastor Guy Marquardt from Christ Lutheran Church in Lodi, California. Hi, Guy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. So you're out in sunny California, and we're not. we'll start there. And you've got grass to mow, which is a very positive thing and something that Sally and I can look forward to. But that's not what we really wanted to talk to you about. So maybe before we get into a neat website that that you have created called the Interactive Passion History, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. You've got a varied, not checkered, but varied past of you know, being a missionary, and now you're in a more— well, I shouldn't say you're in a more traditional setting, but you're not in Brazil anymore.
That's right.
You are in California, which some would say is a foreign country. I can say that because that's where I, you know, originally hail from. But tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're serving and where you have served in the past.
Sure. I'm originally from Appleton, Wisconsin. Went to Fox Valley Lutheran. Then on to Northwestern College, a seminary, graduated in 94. I was assigned to Brazil in the same year, and I was there for 15 years as a missionary. Mm-hmm. And got to try on lots of different hats, church planting and modeling ministry, and seminary professor and administrator and field coordinator, and tried to do my best at all of them.
Yep. Not to mention father, husband, and you know all that stuff too in a foreign country.
Those are also full-time jobs too. Yeah,
right.
And then a year ago, I received the call to Christ in Lodi, and we've been here for almost a full year.
Okay, maybe before we jump into your, you know, what you've been doing with this interactive Passion History, you know, it's always fun when we talk to missionaries to get a flavor for what the technology is like in a foreign mission field. We've talked to who did we talk to in Africa? Sally.
Rob Cirilla, yeah. Paul Knitz in
Paul
Africa,
Knitz,
Rob
right.
Cirilla and
yeah,
Pong Pong.
Paul Knitz, right, talking about the challenges that are related to using technology in a foreign mission field. How was it for you in Brazil?
Yeah, I heard your interview with Paul Knitz, and I've talked with him a lot as well at different conferences. And our experience in Brazil wasn't nearly as rough, let's say, as
right.
they have it in Africa, especially since we've mostly been serving in some of the larger cities. And so we always had fairly regular phone access and internet access, at least shortly after I got there. I know when I first went down in, I guess early 95 is when I got on the field, and we were just then starting to really work with email. When I first got the call and I asked if missionary Charlie Gum could email me some details, he said, "Well, email, what's that?"
yes.
And so I got my parents set up on email right before I got on the plane for Brazil so that we could keep in contact that way. And I didn't hear from them. I didn't hear from them for about a month. Finally, they called. And Mom said, "I can't figure out this stupid computer." And so they ended up calling anyway.
Right.
Back then, email was just not a very user-friendly thing.
Right.
We saw huge changes over the years, though, and became more and more popular. And Brazilian, I guess right now, technology is fairly close to where we're at here in the States.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Very good. Pastor Marquardt, you and I go back a long way. You may not remember, but in the late 90s,
sure.
there was a Wells group called Lyft that was a Yahoo group, I think, is where it started. And
That's
basically
right.
just a simple listserv. And I'm not sure if you were the one who originated that or not. But now, you know, we're more sophisticated. I follow you on Twitter, and we're Facebook friends and that kind of thing. And I picked up on the fact that you tweeted a link to interactivepassionhistory.com, which is a website that you're behind that's basically like the choose-your-own-adventure experience through the passion history. And I remembered it from way back and see that you've updated it and have it, you know, set up on a really nice website. And we were hoping to hear a little bit about the story behind it and, you know, share it with our listeners as a great ministry resource that they can make use of. So how about you tell us a little bit about your website?
Sure, Sally. You're breaking up a little bit here, but I think I got the gist of your question. You mentioned the Lyft, the email group from way back when, and really it's related to the Interactive Passion History in the sense of they both came out of a time when I look back on it now, I can see that I was really struggling with culture shock during my first couple of years in Brazil. I was struggling with who I was on the mission field, struggling with being in a foreign country, learning a foreign language, and being very limited as far as what I could do at that time. And I was looking for a creative outlet. I was looking for a way of keeping in touch with people that were important to me. That's where the email list came from. And the Interactive Passion History also came out of wanting to have a creative outlet in my own language where I felt that I could communicate more clearly and not only speak at a second grade level.
Right.
Before the Interactive Passion History, I tried, for example, I wrote a text adventure game called Pastoral Pitfalls. That was one of my first attempts at creativity using computers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Interactive Passion History. And I guess the summary of what it is, if you go to the site, it's the story of the last, 24 hours, let's say, in the life of Jesus, starting with the events on Maundy Thursday evening and going through his crucifixion on Friday. And the difference is that it's written in the second person. When you read the story, it's supposed to be like you're there, you're a part of the story. And what makes it different is that at different points in the story, you get to choose how the story is going to go on. That is to say, you don't choose whether Jesus will be crucified or not.
Right.
But what parts of the story, what details of the story will you get to witness, so to speak, firsthand? And I guess the inspiration came from some old choose your own adventure books.
Yep.
When I was a kid, where you're the hero of the story, and every once in a while you get a chance to decide if you're going to enter the cave or stay out of the cave, and then you turn to this page or that page depending on what you want to do. With the web, I saw that you could do the same thing, but just with a click of a button.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so that's how I programmed the story.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. The web was kind of made for this kind of thing, where you have a couple possible links, and one link goes to one page, and another link goes to another page. So anybody with an idea could easily do something similar. So when you sat down to do this, first of all, what technology is running it right now? It looks like it's a hosted site of some sort. I see advertising, you know, on the pages themselves. What are you using
right
here?
Now? I just recently put it back on the web. I had taken it off because I changed providers. So when I put it up again now, I used Rapid Weaver on the Mac.
Okay.
But it was all hand-coded.
Okay.
Again, this was back in 96, 97, and there weren't a whole lot of tools for putting on websites with
right.
a nice graphic user interface, and you had to do it all by hand.
Yep.
And that's what I did in 97.
Okay. So when you sat down to build this thing, Who did you think would use it? Who's the site written for? And are there applications or usages that you see right now that people could actually use the site for whatever ministry purpose?
Yeah, originally it was written for me.
Okay,
just to say it was kind
therapeutic.
Of
yes.
yeah, and not only for the creativity, but I spent a lot of time. Wrestling with the chronological events of what happened in those last hours, the events that we're revisiting now during Lent again, and trying to figure out exactly what happened and some of the details and understanding what Christ did and what it was like to be there. So a lot of reading of commentaries and that. So first of all, it was written for me, but comments that I received have come from a wide range of people. Both in our synod and around the world, really, pastors and teachers, but also a lot of lay people. I've heard of people who have printed it up and read it as their devotional material at home. I've heard of classrooms that have teachers have told their students that they were supposed to do it during Lent, or pastors that had their catechism class do it as well. So really a wide range of people.
And certainly a timeless message, so something that can be used again and again with future classes and that kind of thing. What about plans for the future, Pastor Mark Ward? Are you going to develop more choose-your-own-adventure-style writing, or are you working on any other projects that may be of interest to our Wells Tech listeners?
Well, I am also struggling with culture shock here in California, but... So far, it hasn't moved me to do any sort of creative writing. I get to do everything in my own language these days.
Mm-hmm.
I would love, and for years I have talked about the possibility of going back and doing different versions of this, that you could go through the story as different characters as it's written. You read it as if you were a servant in the household of Pontius Pilate. I thought it would be interesting to go back and redo it also through the eyes of perhaps one of the ladies that followed Jesus or one of the disciples or maybe even a Pharisee, somebody who looked at it from a very different viewpoint. That was what I always thought of doing, but I never got around to doing it.
Mm-hmm. So did you create a Portuguese version?
Yes. Somewhere out there is the link. I'm not sure exactly where it's housed anymore, but it's out there.
Okay, yeah, I would think that would be a natural for you. So,
yep.
Great. Well, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your busy Lenten season. Now you've got I'm sure those services to take care of, and you know the sheep that the Lord has placed in front of you there in Lodi, California. Thanks so much for taking the time with us, Guy, and blessings on your new ministry there. You've only been there, you know, about a year now, so we certainly would wish you the Lord's blessings, and thanks for sharing this particular nugget, I guess I would call it, that just came across our radar screen that could easily be used in many different contexts.
Thanks, Martin and Sally, and thank you for everything you do with this show.
Oh, our pleasure. Our thanks again to Guy. Very interesting concept and very, you know, pretty easy to do.
Yeah, and I think it appeals to a lot of people. I know my husband's going to be sharing it with his catechism students.
Oh, cool.
It's a great thing to, you know, give them that second person view of the passion history in the last 24 hours of Jesus' life on this earth. And just a neat resource, and I think appealing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, anything, any tool, any... whatever to get us to study and to enjoy God's word is, I think, is something that we want to share, which is kind of the reason why we started this whole thing in the first place. All right, shall we move on to our picks of the week, Sally?
Yeah, I came across a really simple, quick pick to share today. It's called Web Resizer at webresizer.com. And what it allows you to do is quickly upload an image and make changes to it. Things like resizing, cropping, adding borders, even rounding the corners. But the cool thing about it is it really optimizes your images for using on the web. Now, those of you that are web designers know that it's important to have what we'd call a lightweight web page, or one that doesn't have a lot of large files to download in order to be viewed. And sometimes people use gigantic images on their website, and that really slows down the page refresh. As the page is loading, it's having to download, you know, a 1 meg mm-hmm. image or something ridiculous like that. And with Web Resizer, you can actually see the file changes and the percent reduction in file size that it results in. So they have a sample on their page where they started with a 38 kilobyte image, and they just optimized it for the web, and it turned out to be a 14 kilobyte image, or 62% smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So just a really neat side-by-side thing. Sometimes people are a little leery of optimizing for the web because they think they're going to lose a lot of image quality. But really, our monitors don't allow for super high-quality images anyway. You
right.
know, we're limited by the pixels and that kind of thing that are available on our monitors. They're not super high definition. And so, you know, a lot of it would be unseen to the eye, this optimization process. And so having the side-by-side comparison kind of proves that to you, that, wow, I can't really tell a difference, and yet it's 62% smaller in file size. It's going to make my web page load a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
So check out Web Resizer. It's just a quick and easy thing. Those who have more advanced image editing software at their disposal maybe wouldn't have a need for this, but if you just have an image and you want to make some quick changes to it, this is a great place to go.
Okay, great. Yeah, and comparing this to like Picnic or something like that, those kinds of tools aren't specific to web resources. So this one is really focused on getting these images web ready. So there's some intelligence. Looks like there's some intelligence built into that, and some, you know, with the borders and rounded corners thing. I think that's pretty cool.
Hey, funny that you mentioned Picnic, Martin. I guess maybe we could have a little tiny news in tech. Did you hear that Google bought Picnic yesterday?
Oh, I don't know if that's good or bad news.
Yeah. Mixed reviews on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But good for the Picnic people that they obviously have a good product.
So they must be, Google must have in mind some kind of online image editing resource.
Yeah, I read, you know, maybe incorporating Picnic into Picasa.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes
their
sense.
Their image library.
That'd be
resource.
Cool. Yeah, I use that. But okay, very good. My pick of the week is a utility. It's not free. There's a 30-day free trial, but if you want to buy it, it's $39.95. It's called ExpandDrive, E-X-P-A-N-D-R-I-V-E. If you go to expanddrive.com, You can read all about it. Essentially, it's a tool that sits in the background, works with your Windows Explorer, or if you're on the Mac, it works with the Finder, and allows you to mount FTP, SFTP, or SSH connections on, in Explorer or the Finder. So if you're used to using, and we've talked about this in the past, Sally, FileZilla or Smart or S, there's FTP Explorer. There's all kinds of FTP utilities, Quick FTP or Qt FTP or whatever they all are. This kind of integrates it nicely into Explorer, Windows Explorer or the Mac Finder, and maps them to a drive letter. So if I've got an FTP site that I go to often, so I've got a DreamHost account, which I've talked about in the past, that goes to a website that I maintain to try out different things, martinsbriggs.com. I can load that up into this utility, and it just appears as a drive letter in my Windows Explorer. So I have that as drive Y, for instance. I just double-click on drive Y. It opens up just like a file folder, and I can see everything on that site. So it works for, like I said, FTP, SFTP, and SSH, and very handy utility. I don't need to open up an additional tool like FileZilla to manipulate those files, so I don't have a different interface. I can cut and copy and paste, and I can create new folders and move things around, and I believe I can even change permissions on different files as well. So Expand Drive for Mac and Windows, if you use a lot of FTP sites, and a lot of people in web development do, this might be something to look at.
And just for those who aren't familiar with it, FTP stands for File Transfer Protocol, mm-hmm. and it's basically how you get the files that you're working on your computer to a file that's on the internet. Yep. Typically, you would use FTP protocol to transfer or copy the files from one computer to another.
Yep.
And this makes it sound really simple instead of going through a lot of software. It's just like working in Windows Explorer. You
exactly.
see folders and things. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome.
SFTP is just a variation, Secure File Transfer Protocol, and SSH stands for Secure Shell, which is another technology that essentially allows you to work kind of in a command line interface with your files. So, all right, shall we move on to? Well, we probably want a promo. We talked a little bit about our final web training, but we have one class. Two of the classes are full and closed, and those are the ones that we're doing in New Ulm and in Milwaukee. But we do have room in the Saginaw class, and that one's not until after Easter. That's the first week after Easter, April 6th through 8th, and we still do have room in that class, and we'd love to get more people to beautiful Saginaw in Michigan, probably nice in spring there, and we do have some open spots there. So if you're interested, where do they go, Sally?
The registration information is online at bit.ly/FW4Dummies, standing for Final Web for Dummies. And we'll have that link in the show notes.
All right. And let's see here. Moving on to community feedback.
Yep, we had a lot of people talking to us this week. We had a great show last week with Gail Potretz talking about YouTube in the classroom. And some of the links that we mentioned were to Edutopia magazine, which is a very widely read education magazine. And they picked up on the fact that we were talking about them on our show and sent us some extra links. Teachers' tour of YouTube and using YouTube to inspire young artists. And so we'll have those links in the show notes. In addition, we say thank you to their Twitter account for tweeting about our podcast. And we had lots and lots of retweets sprinkled across the internet as well. So a little bit of good coverage for the Wells Tech podcast from Edutopia.
Very
we appreciate
good.
That.
Yep, we do.
Yep. Speaking of Twitter, Gail followed up our conversation with some links to some video downloaders. That's one thing we didn't talk about in the show. I guess we kind of ran out of time for that. But, one of the things that you can do with YouTube videos is download them for offline usage. And Gail recommended keepvid.com and also a Firefox extension called Video Download Helper. And both of those are resources. There's lots of other ways to download videos. Those are two that Gail has experience with. The caution would be, you know, being sure that you have the proper permissions to download and reuse those videos. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just always, you know, take care of what the copyright issues might be associated with those kind of resources.
Very good. Thanks, Gail.
We also heard from Ryan Rosenthal on Twitter, and he shared a link to a really neat page. It's called Newseum, as in museum, but for news, Newseum. And what you can do is go there and see all the front pages of tons and tons of newspapers from around the world. So if you want to know what's going on and how people are reporting it around the world, go and take a look at today's front pages. Great resource for classrooms, I'm sure.
Yep.
And then, Martin, you had a link that you shared with us via Digo.
Last and least, yes. Very often I'll follow different blogs that share resources that are kind of church or religion-wide, and this is just one of those where they've somebody put together a nice graphical representation of some research that was done on what they call the Almighty Dollar, mapping distribution of income by religious belief. So they broke down all the denominations, or actually not all the denominations, but kind of all, you know, religious categories, including Jewish and Muslim and so on and so forth, Catholics, Protestant, you know, kind of that in that category. And then they mapped average income brackets. So it's kind of an interesting study when you look at this picture that was created of where the wealth is by denomination. And this same group has done other things, but I think it's kind of just an interesting study that I thought I'd, you know, tag and let and share with everybody. So nicely done.
I really like the way they presented it, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat to see. I think they call them infographics.
Infographics, right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very telling way to chart the information.
Yep.
So it's worth a look for that reason,
better than
too.
Just looking at a spreadsheet. Yeah, they've done a
Definitely.
Nice job with it. So. All right. Next week, we will be talking about social networking. I did a presentation a couple weeks back out in Rochester, Minnesota, on social networking and social media in ministry. So we're going to share the contents of that conversation or that presentation and talk about Facebook and Twitter and a few other things that we're finding interesting. And alongside of that, we're going to interview Jason Tesh from Eastside Lutheran Church. They recently launched a brand new website that we thought was pretty cool. And they also have a Facebook page, so it ties in nicely with our conversation on social networking. Sally, I think that's going to about do it for this week.
We'll be joining you next week, I guess, virtually.
Mm-hmm.
We do that every week. But next week will be extra special for us because we'll be in class when the Wells Tech podcast goes live.
So
that'll
be doing
interesting.
A little pre-recording. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's close the show with the music of Don Gallagher, Precious Lord, Take My Hand, from her album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.